So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mehler here, visiting today with Jack Socha, photography expert, photography instructor from Spring Grove, Minnesota. He has some great CDs out there, how to use the digital camera you just bought. Got a great website, which it's escaping me at the moment what the website is, but I will have that for you in a little bit. And certainly he's ready to answer your questions about maybe that new camera you got for Christmas or over the holidays, or maybe the camera you've had a while and just would like to know how to make it work better for you. Or maybe you're in the market for a new camera. Jack, I think, will have some advice on that as well. So join in with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Jack with us by phone. Hi, Jack. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you for having me back on. And that website is acpress.com, acpress.com. I've been giving it a little bit of a facelift, so you'll find it kind of easier to navigate to the photo section where I've got a series of articles, including one on a couple of the cameras we may get to talk about today.
Well, I'm hoping we do have a chance. Cynthia Schuster, our associate director of producers, I forget her title now exactly, got a new Fuji FinePix.
Right.
An HS10 and liked it a lot. Likes it a lot so far.
There's a couple of cameras that caught my eye. I mean, quite frankly, there's a million Me Too cameras out there right now. You walk into your stores, and they're all lined up, and they all look the same. And frankly, in many cases, they do pretty much the same thing, especially the compact point-and-shoots. But Fuji has done something interesting. Well, they have a camera out now. It's called the HS10, a FinePix. It is similar to a single-lens reflex in that it looks like one. You've got an electronic finder on the back. You've got a little electronic viewfinder that you can look through outside. And it has a lens on it that you can't take off. But the lens goes from 24-millimeter wide angle all the way to 720-millimeter telephoto.
That's amazing.
And frankly, for a lot of people out there, and I might even be in that same basket, unless you're going to use a high-speed lens for sports or some kind of a fisheye lens, there's not a whole lot of reason to get a camera that has removable lenses if you've got one that goes from that wide to that telephoto. Cynthia took one up to, I think it was Antarctica, and sent me some pictures she shot with hers. Very nice pictures. It's also got image stabilization. It's a relatively fast-responding camera. One of the reasons people were going for removable lens SLRs was they tended to shoot faster. This one apparently is shooting faster. The reviews are just beginning to come out on it. It's a pretty new camera. But I took a look at that, and I said, you know, when the day comes when I need to replace my camera, I'm getting to the point where I don't want to carry a bag of lenses around. And if I can't shoot it between 24 millimeter and 720 millimeter, I shouldn't be shooting. The other thing is the lens, unlike the compact point-and-shoots, is not motorized. You zoom it by sliding it back and forth, which is the way we used to do it with our film cameras. And I find that much more responsive than trying to overshoot a little bit and back up and overshoot. So I'm really quite interested in this camera.
Yeah, and there's a panoramic. She showed me one of her pan shots. Really,
it's got all the bells and whistles that the more advanced compact cameras have. But it's also got this big lens, which, like I say, it's not a bad deal. They're you know, in the $400 range, which is pretty good deal.
Well, yeah, when you consider the lens range that you have, especially.
Yeah, so it's something to look into, and I'll be looking forward to seeing some more in-depth reviews of it to see, you know, how good the lens is. I suspect for the kinds of things that I shoot. Boy, I tell you.
it'll work just fine.
You can buy a smaller gadget bag, yeah.
Oh, boy. Gary in Boscobel has a question for you. Let's go to Gary. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Larry. Jack, I got a question. I just recently bought a Canon Rebel EOS 1000D, and it's my first digital camera, and I've read through the 200-plus pages instruction manual.
Good for you.
But one of the things that I have a reoccurring problem with, and that is getting sharp focus on pictures. I use use it a lot for nature and wildlife photography. And I've used a camera mount that clamps to a car window. I always take pictures with it braced up against something steady, but I just can't seem to get good, sharp pictures with that. And I don't know if it's me or if it's just I'm asking the capability of that camera to go beyond what it can do. And then I have another question is, on that camera, I can zoom in on an image up to 10 magnification.
Mm-hmm.
But when I take that chip to a photo processing place and zoom in, I can't zoom in anywhere near the 10 power magnification that I can on the camera. What is the glitch there that the processing, you can't zoom in as much, enlarge it as much as what you can do within the camera itself?
It sounds like a couple of different things going on. Most of the stock lenses that come with these cameras are not terribly fast lenses. The maximum aperture when you're zoomed out is usually 4.5 or 5.6. And at that range, at that aperture, sometimes your shutter speeds aren't really quite fast enough unless it's a really bright day and you've got the ISO set relatively high. So what you may be experiencing is still some camera shake, or it could also be subject movement. But you're saying you're bracing the camera on a car. Make sure the engine's not running. Because
yes, make sure the engine's
running. That's good, yeah. And as far as the other part is concerned, I guess the main thing I would be checking first is to make sure that you've got the camera set for the highest resolution that it can do, because it's possible to turn down the resolution, and also for the highest quality settings. It may be that you're just not getting a sharp image because the resolution isn't set quite as high. But what I would do would be, if you have questions like that, I would, especially the part about the not being able to make it as large as you're seeing in the viewfinder, I would try to go over to a full-service camera store and just have them check out your workflow on this to see whether there's some mistake that you're making on that one. Because there's something funny there. Exactly. And also, I just had I was talking to a lady on the phone who the parts of her pictures were getting cut off and she wasn't getting everything that she wanted. And what it was that the aspect ratio of the print wasn't the same as she expected. And that's something people forget, that a 5x7 print, an 8x10, and a 4x6 are different shapes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important to take those into consideration. One of the free software programs that I mentioned on my site at acpress.com is called FastStone Image Viewer, and that will let you preview your pictures with the print size and print shape you have in mind to make sure you don't lose stuff. So a couple of things to look into.
Thanks a lot for calling, Gary. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org, or you could even go to our Facebook page, The Larry Mehler Show. In fact, Mary Beth did that, Jack, and she says she has a Mac now,
mm-hmm.
And the iPhoto package that came installed on it, she thinks is really lame. She loved Photoshop. I wonders if you have any ideas.
Well, there's Photoshop Elements. There's a lot of software that you can get that will cost you some money. And I've got an iMac at home, and I use it quite a bit. But also, once again, if you go to my site, acpress.com, and you go to the photo section, one of the top articles I wrote is called 5 Free Image Editing Programs. And one of them is called the Graphic Image Manipulation Program, or GIMP. And that was done in what they call open source, and there's a Mac version available for that. And that will do a lot of what Photoshop will do. You can dodge and burn and crop and do all kinds of levels and all these things. And then see if you like doing that kind of thing. And then you may want to move along and then purchase, say, Photoshop Elements, which is under $100. Also, you might want to go to the new Mac App Store, which is available, and see what's available for instant purchase.
Absolutely. But you've got that free download at acpress.com.
Yeah, it'll give you a link to the actual company and a brief description of what the program is like. There's 5 different completely free ones up there. That's the only one that also is available for Mac at this time.
Okay. Joyce and Nina, let's turn to you now. Hi, Joyce.
Hi. I have a Canon. It's a image stabilizer, mm-hmm. power shot. Okay. It's probably 2 years old now. Okay. And just recently, in the last month, I used Energizer Ultimate lithium batteries.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, it's either been going through the batteries real quickly or my batteries are bad, but they're new. And I keep them in my camera case. And if they're rubbing against each other, does that run down the battery, or is that bad for?
Yeah, well, if you're putting your batteries in your camera case loose, you be careful that you don't have something else metal in there where they might short circuit. But more likely, what's going on? There's a lot of settings you can do on your camera that will either use more power or use less power. For example, if you have your camera set for continuous autofocus, it's always focusing, where other settings can have it so that when you just press the shutter button, it then focuses. If you're reviewing your pictures a lot or showing your pictures a lot, if you're using your flash a lot, all these can add up to using a lot more power. So you might try turning off your flash, especially if you're outdoors where you really don't need it, because when it's on auto flash, it's always charging your batteries. I would look into some of your settings and see if there's some things left on that are drawing power that you don't really need.
Oh, that's a good tip.
But usually the camera doesn't suddenly start using more power.
No, okay. Yeah. It is always on auto.
You might try turning your flash off unless you really need it, and also check your focus to make sure it's not focusing constantly. Even using the image stabilizer might be using a little more power, and possibly that could be turned off if you don't need it.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks, Joyce. Ron in Baraboo, turning to you now. Hi, Ron.
Hi. My radio wasn't tuned in very well, and you're talking about this new camera around $400. What were you talking about? What kind of camera was that?
It's called a Fuji FinePix HS10.
HS10.
Right, and it has a non-removable lens.
Okay, now, I have a Pentax P3.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go to a digital camera.
Yeah.
And Pentax makes a K7 or a KX. And in your opinion, is that Fuji a better camera than this K7 or KX?
Well, it's
the reason I'm thinking about it is because all my lenses fit.
Right. Now, are your lenses autofocus or manual focus?
Manual focus.
The old. Okay. You know what? In my experience, quite frankly, I mean, I've got an Olympus SLR, and I can put old screw mount manual focus lenses on it. And after a while, you sit there and you go, you know, manual focus isn't much fun anymore. So if you want to get a Pentax body and use some of those lenses, that's great. But again, depending on how good your eyes are, and maybe you're a bit younger than I am, the autofocus has gotten really, really good. And so you may want to just, when the camera's available in a good, you know, a place where you can check out the camera, you may want to just try it out and see how it feels, and then decide whether you want to shoot traditionally using your old lenses on a new camera, or whether you want to just make the jump and let the camera do more stuff for you.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Our guest today, Jack Socha, talking with him today about digital photography, how to use that digital camera you've got or maybe you're looking to buy. Larry Mueller here. Rachel Owens, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take your digital photography questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you could even go to our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show, and you can do it that way as well as we visit with Jack Socha. And Jack, we have Deepak online next with a question. So in the Milwaukee area, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've got a question about the new cameras, like SD1400 is what I have. And no matter which mode I try, I always get a delay in taking the picture. Like, for example, my daughter running around, I want to take a quick picture, and it just waits for like 2-3 seconds. By the time, you know, I missed the opportunity to take a picture.
Yeah.
And it happened, I had SD300 before, which had the same problem. And I was just wondering if it's just Canon-specific or I'm doing something wrong.
What's your camera again? Tell us what you have now.
I'm sorry, what?
What camera do you have now? Tell me.
It's the SD1400.
Who's the camera manufacturer? What brand name is it? Do you know? That's the model number. But is it a Canon or Nikon or Minolta or something like that?
It's a Canon.
Okay, it's a Canon. Yeah. All right. Yeah. There's a couple of things that go on. I mean, number one, there is a decided delay when you press the shutter button compared to film cameras, because there's about 8,000 things that have to be energized that normally were not done before we had digitals. One way you can try to beat that is that most cameras, if you press down the shutter halfway, it locks in the exposure and locks in the focus, and then at that decisive moment, you press the rest of the way, and it takes the picture.
I tried that, actually, unfortunately. I did that all the time, and when I click the button, it still waits.
Yeah, and sometimes if you're using an automatic flash, it waits till the flash is charged. If you're shooting in a little bit of low light, it takes a while for the focus to find the subject. It's getting better, but it's something that we are unfortunately going to have to live with. Sometimes if your camera has a manual focus setting or you can set it for landscape, it defeats the autofocus, and sometimes that will speed things up as well. So you might try putting it on a manual focus setting if you have that, and you might be surprised how much that speeds it up.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Robert in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I bought a Nikon SLR digital used, and so I didn't have the instruction manual. I know I could probably find it online, but figured it'd be easier to just ask you.
Okay. Maybe.
All right. I took the chip. You know, I thought it was last time I did this, I didn't have a problem, but I think something might have gotten changed in the menu for formatting the images. I took the chip out, went to CVS, went to Kinko's, and their reader said, you know, can't find any images on this chip. And then I, you know, went to put it on my computer, and, yeah, there's images. They're in NEF format, which I guess is a Nikon proprietary, you know, maybe a RAW. I guess it was called a RAW format. I would think that these commercial printers, would read this format, but they don't apparently.
No, most printers will only take JPEGs simply because that's the most common format. So what you'd probably have to do is load your images into a computer, open them, and then save as a JPEG, and then take those back to the printer. Because, yeah, they just, they're aimed pretty much at consumer-level stuff. And, you know, there are a few places will print RAW images, but most of them are pro labs. So I think you got to have to spend a little time loading those and resaving them as JPEGs. And then
open source software that converted the whole batch. It took like an hour for 100 or so. Converted the whole batch to JPEG. But is there a setting on the camera that can?
Oh yeah, you definitely you have to go into your menu and locate probably similar in an area near where you're setting your resolution and your compression. There should be a place where it tells you which file format do you want. And you may have to go online and find the manual to find that, but it'll be worth the trip.
Yeah, definitely be worth the trip. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And let's go to Westby next. Talk to Al. Hi, Al.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
I've got a question on rechargeable batteries for digital cameras. I've got a Pentax. Jack, how do you say that? DIST? The D apostrophe?
Yeah, DCS something. Yeah, right. Yeah.
What should I be looking for batteries? I just got the manual out, and I see I've had the camera for 8 years by the copyright date. And
okay. Now, does it use AA batteries?
Correct.
Okay. Well, number one, obviously you want rechargeables because they will they're reusable. And the older cameras really do tend to drain batteries faster than the newer ones do.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, when you go look at the batteries – Take a look at the side of the battery and look for the milliamp number. The bigger the milliamp number, like 1,800 or 2,200 milliamps, the more juice they will hold. And on your camera, because it will suck the stuff dry quicker, you want as powerful a one as you can get your hands on, probably in the 2,500 milliamp range. There are and basically get those and get a simple charger, and you're back in business. You'll probably want to buy at least two sets for your camera, because I've had some that were that vintage, and when you use them with the flash and all that good stuff, it drained even alkaline batteries in 45 minutes flat. So you're going to want to buy the highest capacity batteries you can find. And quite frankly, with the price of cameras getting so cheap these days, you may want to buy a new one.
Yeah?
Yeah. This was about a $1,500 camera.
Well, in that case, you may want to buy some batteries. Now, I got to tell you, though, I just sold my Minolta Dimage, which I paid $1,200 for 8 years ago, to a local high school kid to use in his high school class for $50.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was going for on eBay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's scary.
Thanks, Al. Good luck. On to Sarah in Madison next. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I've been looking at a few cameras, and I was trying to choose first between the Canon Rebel EOS 55D2 or T2, between that and maybe a Nikon. But also, I was wondering if you could talk to me about the lenses to purchase and the advantages to getting a nicer lens, which I hear you.
That's a really good question.
The camera.
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, most people buy cameras backwards. They look at the camera body and don't pay attention to the lenses. And what you really should do is look around and see what lenses you need for the kind of work you want to do, and then see what body fits them. Because the bodies are basically a box. You may go through two or three digital camera bodies over the next 10 years, but you may keep the same lens for the entire time. And generally speaking, the lenses that come with the camera, the so-called kit lens, they're okay lenses for most snapshots. They're not really great for wedding photography or for sports or for things like that. So you may want to look at your lenses first. Whether you get them for Canon or Nikon is a real toss-up. But again, most folks tend to make those choices backwards. I would put most of your consideration and most of your money into the lens, because that's what you're going to hang on to for the years to come.
There you go.
Can you tell me about the lenses out there?
Well, again, I'd have to ask you what you're planning on shooting. If you're planning on shooting indoor action sports of kids in basketball courts, you're going to have to buy some pretty expensive lens gear. If you're just doing regular outdoor travel photography, perhaps the lens that came with the camera will be fine. Sit down and look at the pictures you've taken and see which ones you wish you could have gotten more in, or which ones you wish you could have gotten closer. And if you've got a bunch that you wish you could have gotten closer, then you want to buy more of a telephoto lens. If you've got a bunch that you wish you could have gotten more in, lean more towards ones that are more wide angle.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And let's see. Karen in Watertown shot us an email. Would you recommend a 3-year warranty that costs $100 on a $700 Canon camera? Is that
no.
a good value? No, you
no,
wouldn't.
No. It all depends on the company giving you the warranty. But I was in a store one day and someone brought back a camera with a warranty that they had for a few months. And the trick was the warranty came with the camera they bought. So they gave them a new camera, but the warranty no longer applied to the new one. And I knew some folks who worked in, let's just say it's one of the major big stores, and they used to say every time they sold one of those warranties, they would laugh at the customer as they left.
Yeah.
$100, I mean, given how quickly the camera will devalue, I don't think it's that good a deal. And like I say, generally speaking, that warranty is on that one there. So a year later, if the camera breaks, they get you another camera. But by that time, the cameras have dropped in price. $100 could have been used to buy a new camera.
Mike in Oshkosh, we turn to you now. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I've got a slightly older Olympus Stylus 750, and anytime I go out on a bright, sunny day, I can't see what I'm trying to take a picture of. I just kind of point and shoot and hope for the best.
I know what you mean. That's a universal problem. There are several companies that make little stick-on lens hoods for the back. So you'd have to go to a camera store that was pretty well stocked, and there's different sizes for different screens, and these things either Velcro on or there's a little double-sided tape. I use one on my little Lumix all the time, and the nice thing about them is they flip up to afford some shade, and when they're folded down, they protect the back screen. So they cost maybe $20, and they will help to solve the problem.
And you suggested on a different camera if I were to upgrade, one that's got a noticeably brighter screen?
It doesn't matter. Unfortunately, one of the problems with compact cameras these days is that in bright light you can't see the screen, which is why I like some of the cameras that have optical viewfinders or at least little built-in additional electronic ones that are inside a viewfinder. But it's a problem.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, thanks a lot, Mike, for calling. Yeah. And Ken in Appleton. Hi, Ken.
Hi. I've got two questions. I thought of another one after I called. One is that I'm looking for a good waterproof digital camera that has good close-up or macro capability. Do you have a suggestion for that?
There are waterproof housings for a lot of the major brands, and I think you probably are going to want to go that way. I have not seen anything that is the equivalent of the old Nikonis cameras, and if you do, they're pretty expensive. But I think if you look into Icolite or one of those companies that they make these plastic housings, you can then find one that will fit a popular camera that is out there. The advantage being also that perhaps a year or two from now, you may find a higher resolution compact camera that will still fit the housing.
Yeah, I've had a couple of Pentax. I have a Pentax Optio W30 right now, but I really don't like the quality of it, and actually the screen went bad on it.
Mm-hmm.
My main problem, I don't necessarily need the waterproof. I just need it to be dustproof, and the cameras with the movable lenses just
right.
Don't work for me.
Yeah, well, believe it or not, if you go to one of the home repair stores, like the Home Depot or whatever, there is a camera made for use on the work, you know, out at construction sites and things like that.
Oh.
They're about $189, or they're about 8 megapixels. I don't recall the brand, but they make a universal battery pack that fits all kinds of tools, and they've got one that is built like a tank. It's completely enclosed, dustproof, and everything is designed to be used on construction sites. So go to a Home Depot and take a look. Ask about their digital camera for working in that kind of environment, and they'll point it out to you. If I could,
yeah.
I'll think of the name the minute I hang up today.
I did look at that, and then I went online and checked, and the ratings on it are horrible.
They're not. Yeah, you're gonna right. Whenever you mount something inside glass or plastic enclosures, there's going to be some image degradation. But unfortunately, this is not an area that is well served by the camera industry right now. So I would look into an Icolite housing. I think it's Ikelite. Or else look for ones that have been so-called ruggedized. But there's not that many out there, I'm afraid.
Okay. Next, one last quick question. I'm looking for a good slide scanner.
What I would suggest
use at home.
Yeah, you can go out and you can buy a dedicated slide scanner. I have a Canon flatbed scanner. I think it's called an 8800F that does up to 2.25-inch negatives or slides, and I am just tickled to death with the darn thing. It works fine for me. They cost around $150 or maybe a little more. But look up Canon. I think it's called an 8800, if I'm not mistaken. It's a flatbed with a built-in adapter in the lid, and for most of us, it does a good, fast job. USB 2, macro PC compatible, and it satisfies my needs. Let's put it that way.
All right.
All right.
Thanks a lot for calling, Ken. Appreciate it. And Mike and Holman, on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I have a similar problem to one of the previous callers with it's an OFP file from off of an Olympus. And your advice about moving it to the computer, I've done that. I've tried to open it to save it as a JPEG, but the problem is that you can't open the file.
Hmm. I've not run across that particular format. Is that their proprietary RAW format?
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, you might want to go to the Olympus website and see if they have any downloadable converters. Just go to Olympus and look, or else type in that. Type in, is it OST? You said it was.
O, F as in Frank, P as in Paul.
Type that into Google.
System?
Yeah, type that into Google along with the word support. And that should bring up some forums and discussions on what to do with that. And I suspect that would be your best way of getting to it.
All right. There you go. Thank you for calling. John in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. I have two questions. The first one is about Sony has a brand new single-lens reflex camera that where the mirror does not move. Could you explain how that works?
Yeah.
Does anybody else have that too now?
Well, it's a funny thing is that particular style of system has been around since the middle 1960s. It's what's called a pellicle mirror. It's a half-silvered mirror, and so the light goes through the mirror and hits the sensor, and a portion of it gets bounced up into the electronic viewfinder so you can see it. This makes the camera much quieter, much less vibration. The difficulty is that, number one, dust can settle on the mirror.
Oh.
And number two, there is still some question over a long period of time is how long will that mirror hold up? Will it darken? Will it lighten? Whatever. Frankly, at this stage of the game, they're getting awful close to having cameras with no mirrors in them whatsoever, where you've got the sensor on the back, plus you've got a double electronic viewfinder up on the top. So this is a, in my opinion, that was a solution looking for a problem.
No. Okay, there
okay,
you go.
And then I have another question.
Okay.
Olympus has a 4/3 system, which is an open, non-proprietary system. And they have mentioned that they redesign their lenses, unlike other manufacturers, so that the rays come in more at a straighter angle, closer to being parallel instead of at an oblique angle, like near the edge. And based on letters I've read in photo magazines where people have had film lenses and used them on digital SLRs, there's been numerous letters where people have said that the performance has been extremely poor using what are otherwise excellent film lenses on a digital SLR. Could this be because bolster Olympus's argument that you need lenses where the light rays come in closer to being parallel rather than at the sharp angle, because film wouldn't care what angle the light comes in at, whereas the digital sensors are very particular?
Right.
For that,
you know, the funny thing is, number one, I have an Olympus SLR, and I have an adapter for it that lets me put on lenses from 1956. And in my completely unscientific testing, I find no difference. I mean, I would not base my purchase on that theory. I think if you've got a halfway decent piece of glass, it should work pretty well. The biggest benefit of modern lenses is they've got much better coatings, and also, of course, you've got the electronic communication to the camera, so your focusing is more precise, and you've got image stabilization. But I do put on, you know, 1960 East German portrait lenses on my camera, not very often anymore, because as I told that one gentleman earlier, he was talking about the Pentax thing. Once you start using some of these modern autofocus lenses on a modern camera, you get spoiled.
Okay. And is Olympus the only like open system SLR, and who else is making equipment for that now?
Well, you know, basically what each of these companies is fighting for a particular format they think is best, and you just have to find the set of features that you like. Now, there are Canon makes an adapter for screw mount lenses. Olympus makes an adapter for several different ones. So if you're wanting to put older lenses on, take a look and see what adapters are available, and then I would go from there. But you know, these days these cameras are pretty darn good. I wouldn't be too worried about which system works the best. On my Olympus, if I put a 35 millimeter film camera lens on it, it doubles the focal length. If I put it on a Canon, it does it 1.5 times. So there's things like that.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, John. Gary in Mosinee, hello.
Yes, I have a Canon Rebel XTI, and the screen has got a big black spot on it. I think what happened is it got too hot when we were down visiting in Iowa. Is that something that's fixable, or?
Is it showing up on the pictures themselves?
I get nothing. The camera does not work.
Oh,
okay. Well, then I hate to tell you that most cameras are beyond economical repair.
Okay.
If the camera's not working at all, it's kind of a moot point. But if you did have a glob on your screen and it wasn't showing up on your pictures, you just live with it for another year or two till you buy another camera.
Yeah, but...
I guess I'll use it as a boat anchor.
Okay. Well, hang on to the lens, because the lens will work on the next camera that you have. And maybe the battery will as well.
Thanks, Gary. Oh, boy. Nick in Green Bay, hello.
Hi, the camera you're talking about is Ryobi. Wanted to get one.
Oh, yeah, Ryobi. Yeah, that was the one. Yes, thank you.
The other question I got for you real quick is I got a Kodak point and shoot, and I want to go cross-country skiing, but I want to take it with me. What kind of effect does the cold have on a point-and-shoot camera?
Oh, it's a really good question, especially with the weather coming up the next day or two. If you go outside in like, you know, sub-zero weather or below freezing weather for an extended time with your camera, of course, when you're out there, the battery capacity will drop, just like in your car. So you might want to carry spare batteries inside your shirt pocket. The other thing is bring along a Ziploc bag, because just with the way your eyeglasses fog up from the moisture in the air hitting the glass, that can also form inside your camera and outside your camera, and it could short-circuit the camera. Same with cell phones. So before you bring that camera indoors, put it in a Ziploc bag and let it come to room temperature. If you have to look at your pictures right away, take the card out outside, then put the camera in a Ziploc bag and use a card reader to read the pictures. But the performance will suffer outside when it gets cold. I have used cameras taking photos of people skiing at real darn cold weather, and they work pretty well. But be careful when you bring them back inside.
There you go.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. And, Jack, thank you so much. I wanted to send people back to your website, acpress.com.
Yeah, I've been doing a little rework of it, and it's acpress.com. There's information about the CD tutorial called How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought, but also a lot of articles about photography and some other tech articles as well. And I've redesigned the front a little bit, so it's a little easier to get around. And there's a lot of how-to information there as well.
Yeah, there sure is. And thank you so much for being with us. You'll come back?
Oh, anytime.
All right. Thanks, Jack.
All right. Bye-bye.
Jack Socha, our guest today. He does a great job. He knows an awful lot about photography and digital cameras. And so it's wonderful to have him with us. And I tell you what, we will have him back again for sure. And let's see, get him on. But we have a couple of guys that know a lot about grilling are Mad Dog and Merrill. And they're coming up next to talk with us about wintertime grilling here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.